Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Reardon. I want the listener to know that this open took us five takes.
All right, but that's because I wanted to say It's the first podcast of the post-Ashley Judd era.
Yes, I understand the Supreme Court has been wrestling with that all week.
Yes, they have been wrestling with that.
What is America like without Ashley Judd as a Senate candidate from Kentucky, even though she lives in Tennessee?
Even though she lives in Tennessee, and even though she's famous as a actress from a musical family. Nonetheless, she was perhaps the Democrats' best chance to knock off Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate.
Yeah, but we'll talk about that later because most importantly is what the Supreme Court is trying to decide this week, both in the appeal of Proposition 8 on Tuesday, the California
ban on gay marriage.
Ban on gay marriage that was passed in 2008, and the Defense of Marriage Act that the Democrats fought against. Oh, no, wait.
No, wait. It was 1996. It was another time.
Oh. That's when discrimination against gays was okay.
Well, 85 senators voted for the Defense of Marriage Act
That's
in
right.
1996.
That's
85.
Right.
You almost never get 85 senators for anything, for adjournment, for, you know, approving the daily record.
Well,
85
well,
senators
have 90,
out of 100.
You did have 98 senators voting for the Gulf of Tonkin resolution.
Well, you had more than 80% of the House voting for it. So everybody was for the Defense of Marriage Act back in 1996, and now, before the Supreme Court, they couldn't even get people to come in and defend it.
No, and as a matter of fact, we know that Bill Clinton, the president who signed it in 1996, has already written an op-ed in the Washington Post a few weeks ago talking about the unconstitutionality of it. But Bob Barr, you know, the first two syllables of that great Beach Boys song.
Bob, 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 Bob,
but even Bob Barr was one of the prime
sponsors. He's changed his mind.
He has. Of course, he was one of the key sponsors of it in 96, and he's also against it.
And not only Bill Clinton, but also, even more importantly, the second President Clinton, possibly, has also come out and said she's against the Defense of Marriage Act and thinks that it's unconstitutional. So has our current president, Barack Obama, who, as recently as 2008 when he ran for president and 2011 when he was president, was still saying he didn't really think that marriage should be for gays. It should be for a man and a woman, and civil unions should be for gay.
Oh, yeah, no, exactly. I mean, everybody, until Biden and Obama came out, so to speak, on this issue in May of 2012, everybody was evolving. And now, if you don't evolve quickly enough, and I think Hillary Clinton learned that with some blowback to her position, late position, you're going to be left behind. Andrew Cuomo, Martin O'Malley, all the who's who of
Mark
Democrats.
Warner, Mark Warner, even John Tester of Montana and Mark Begich of Alaska, not states where you would think that there'd be a huge upswelling of support for gay marriage. All those Democrats are lining up so that we're now down to only 9 Democrats in the entire Senate, 9 out of 55, counting the independents who vote with them, who are still willing to say they would support the Defense of Marriage Act.
Well, I think the big news of the week, I mean, of course, all these senators who Mark Warner is up in 2014, but Kay Hagan of North Carolina came out for it on Wednesday, I believe. And what's so interesting about that is that her own state last May voted 61-39
to ban.
So she not only is up in 2014, but she's going to run in a state, North Carolina, that doesn't seem to be moving along as the other states seem to be.
That's correct. And what's driving this to a very large degree, of course, is an actual change in the sentiment of the voting public. And we've seen this in poll after poll, where some polls now show nearly 60%, 58% in a Washington Post NBC poll that said they're ready to have gay marriage. They're ready to have the same kind of laws apply to same-sex couples. So that's obviously driving it. There's also a lot of financial support for candidates in the Democratic Party who will come out against the DOMA and in favor of gay marriage. And some of that rapidness, the suddenness of it, seemed to have been annoying to some of the more conservative justices on the Supreme Court. And we heard them talking about it from the bench this week. This is Anthony Kennedy.
We have 5 years of information to weigh against 2,000 years of history or more. On the other hand, there is an immediate legal injury or legal, what could be a legal injury, and that's the voice of these children. There are some 40,000 children in California, according to the red brief, that live with same-sex parents. And they want their parents to have full recognition and full status.
I just wonder what the court is ultimately going to decide. Perhaps they will decide if it's up to the states, then therefore the Defense of Marriage Act must go because there's no federal law. But at the same time, you uphold Proposition 8 in California because that's what the voters decided.
That's right. And I think we heard some hints of this from Kennedy this week. He is a Reagan appointee and a conservative, but he's often a swing vote on the court. He's the fulcrum point, if you will, between the four who are always conservative and the four who are always liberal.
The new Sandra Day O'Connor, although more to the right than O'Connor was.
That is correct. And I think in this case, he was clearly signaling his sympathy for the state's rights consideration, and that if we did let Proposition 8 die through the lack of support from the state, and we didn't grant standing to the people who did sue from California, and ditto if they were to knock down DOMA and say the state should have been deciding this all along. So that appeared to be the emerging consensus of the court this week. But as we learned last year with health care, you can't take too much away from these oral arguments because sometimes they ask questions for information and sometimes they don't necessarily signal how they're going to vote by the questions they ask.
There's something very fascinating to me about this podcast or about any podcast we do, Ron Elving, because what we do is we talk about the news of the week and what's going on and what people are saying, but we rarely get an opportunity to just sit back and say, my goodness, this seems to be a huge sea change. You know, you talk about civil rights. I mean, that took decades and decades.
Generations.
Yeah, exactly. And whereas, of course, there will be proponents of marriage equality who will say, well, look, this is taking too long anyway. You're still years behind everybody else in the 70s who fought for this. It just seems fascinating to me that to argue against same-sex marriage seems so counter what the prevailing opinion is in the country. And you notice that Republicans, they may still feel this way. They may still, in their heart of hearts, be opposed to same-sex marriage. They're not pushing ballot initiatives in the states. They seem to be realizing that a change is coming and we may not have to embrace it, but at least get out of the way.
One of the unpredictable things about this is what would happen if the justices were to, in some way or another, step out a little further than we expect them to and do something really monumental along the lines of a Roe versus Wade or a Brown versus Board of Education kind of decision. And if they were to do that, would that take the issue off the table and mean that Republicans didn't have to deal with it anymore? Or would it have the effect of starting an internal war within the Republican Party between those people who do very much oppose gay marriage in the Republican Party, and polls show that's still a majority of the party's view, and those who want to move on and appeal more to the younger generation? And by the way, one last point on the polling. Among people over the age of 30, there is still strong opposition to gay marriage. It's mostly the people under 30 who poll into the 70s and even 80%.
Regardless of party.
Regardless of party. Regardless of any other consideration, people under 30 are ready for gay marriage, ready for same-sex marriage to be treated the same as all other marriages.
You know, if there is a big sea change with marriage equality, I wonder if the same is the case for a change in the gun laws. And the reason I ask that is because we saw after the tragedy of Newtown and the Sandy Hook horror, well, one poll, I think it was a CBS poll, that had 57% of Americans saying, we've got to change the gun laws in this country. Now that number is down to 47%. There's a big ad campaign out by Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, this week, a $12 million campaign in 13 states trying to affect or influence 15 senators, but there's not a mention of an assault weapons ban. And now we're talking about the most we can expect is universal background checks. And I'm not diminishing the importance of that, but several months ago, there was Dianne Feinstein, there was a president, there was Joe Biden who had his task force. Everybody was saying, well, we got to do something. We got to get the guns off the street. Now we're not even talking about that anymore.
Well, and that was in the first flush of reaction to Newtown. And unquestionably, there has been a cooling of the national reaction to that tragedy. And unquestionably, the forces of the NRA and all the other Second Amendment defenders in the country have been marshaled effectively. And frankly, $12 million spread over 13 states is really not a lot of money in this day and age, and it probably is not going to mean nearly as much to those senators who are being targeted. Take Mark Pryor in Arkansas, for example, as what he has seen happen to other politicians in the past who have gotten on the wrong side of the NRA and the Second Amendment. He knows what that would cost him. It would probably cost him his seat in the Senate next year.
And I wonder, having Michael Bloomberg coming in, I mean, it's one thing to come into the Illinois 2nd Congressional District, which is
urban,
lots of crime, lots of fear of guns, and make a difference. But you go into Arkansas, you go into Louisiana, you go into North Carolina, Michael Bloomberg being the driving force behind trying to change public opinion, that seems a little bit of a stretch to me.
I understand. And let's not, though, completely write off Mayor Bloomberg, and let's not completely dismiss his large investment of personal resources until we've at least given him a chance to have his own say.
I am cautiously optimistic. I think when you have an issue where 90% of the public, 80% of NRA members even, say that they think we should have reasonable checks before people are allowed to buy guns, they all support the Second Amendment, as do I do. But there are an awful lot of people that think that this is one of the great issues of our time.
Surprisingly or strangely, among the 15 senators that Michael Bloomberg is ostensibly targeting in this campaign is Jeff Flake, is Saxby Chambliss.
This is hopeless.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Arizona, Georgia,
yeah, I don't understand
Indiana.
That. But what he is doing, you know, when Harry Reid took the assault weapons ban off the Senate calendar, he basically protected a lot of Democrats in red states, like the Kay Hagans, like the Mark Pryors, like the Mary Landrews, people like that. But Bloomberg is not going to do that. Bloomberg is going to say, look, you got to commit. You got to. That's a New Yorker. He's a New Yorker. I'm just paraphrasing him. You got to take a stand against guns. And so he is not willing to give a pass to, you know, the Mary Landrews and the Kay Hagans. And that's going to be a tough thing in states like that.
Yeah, the mayor can say you got to, but they ain't going to.
Yeah, especially in Passover, I was reading Haggadah. Actually, my mind is in Haggadah. See, that's a great joke if you understand.
For those of you following the simultaneous Yiddish translation, the podcast has now been going on for 20 minutes without making any sense.
Oy vey!
Now, there's a reason for a lot of these guys to be really thinking about 2014, because it's already 2014 in a lot of these Senate races around the country.
Yeah, and of course, the big news of the week is Tim Johnson's decision in South Dakota not to seek a fourth term. Of course, Tim Johnson suffered a very serious brain hemorrhage in 2006. His voice to this day remains very slurred, but he is alert. He won a big reelection battle in 2008, but he wasn't raising money. They thought he was weak, and a very strong Republican candidate,
the former Governor Rounds,
Mike Rounds, declared a few months ago. And of course, he may not be the Republican nominee, just for the record. The conservatives don't like him. Jim DeMint's PAC say, Mike Rounds is too liberal. But the point is, this is a state, and of course we have said this with North Dakota and Montana, but this is a state, South Dakota, where Mitt Romney won it by 18 percentage points. The Republicans are very optimistic about getting this, and of course it's either going to be Mike Rounds or maybe Kristi Noem, the congresswoman at large.
She's elected for the
statewide,
entire state.
Right,
yes.
Statewide, and so the Republicans are very optimistic about this. Of course, the Democrats have two possible candidates, Brendan Johnson, who is
possibly related?
Possibly his son, and he's possibly the U.S. attorney, and possibly walking into a nepotism argument if he does run. Of course, there's also Stephanie Herseth Sandlin, the former statewide member of Congress.
The who House, lost to
Kristi Noem, yeah. And of course, there's no place like Noem. But she's a possible candidate.
Why I brought that up to give you that opportunity, I will never know.
No.
And so that's a big question mark for the Democrats, and one that they had hoped they would have an incumbent running in. And, of course, much easier to hold a seat when you've got an incumbent who has been as personally popular as Tim Johnson, mm-hmm. even with his debility.
And right now, he's the fifth Democrat to announce he's not running this year. And for the most part, I think the Democrats keep most of the states like Levin in Michigan, Lautenberg in New Jersey, perhaps Harkin in Iowa. But, of course, Jay Rockefeller in West Virginia.
Big question mark.
That could go Republican with Shelley Moore Capito. And I suspect that the Republicans could take the South Dakota seat as well. But, of course, talking about something a year and a half in advance is ridiculous, as we learned the day of the election in North Dakota with Heidi Heitkamp.
And
the day
Montana.
And Montana with John Tester. So
that's
we're
right.
not making predictions.
All right. And the Republicans do have some worries of their own about holding some of their seats. Saxby Chambliss is retiring. And the first and only for a long time Republican statewide well-known person who was running for that was Paul Brown, who is a member of the House who is, well, shall we say, defining of that particular wing of the House Republican Party that gave us Todd Akin.
Well, he is very, very conservative, and many...
But he's an outspoken kind
he
of,
is.
You know,
yes.
denouncing things like evolution as being a product of hellfire.
Right.
So
now, some of his stuff is really, it's fair to say, over the top, shall we say, but no other Republican was coming forward. This week, Phil Gingrey, who's a doctor, a member of Congress, announced he's going to run against Brown in the primary. There's some rumors that Jack Kingston, another member of Congress may run. Interestingly, Phil Gingrich was running for the Senate. His House seat, Bob Barr, the former congressman we talked about with the Defense of Marriage Act.
His name is the first two syllables of that Beach Boys song.
Actually, originally by the Regents.
One other state we ought to mention that the Democrats feel pretty good about holding, but we don't know which Democrat. Two members of the House delegation are running against each other in the state of Massachusetts.
Right. Of course, that's Ed Markey and Stephen Lynch. The primary is April 30th. Most poll, there was a WBUR poll this week that had Markey up 35-24, which indicates a lot of undecideds, even though the primary is only a month or so away. Michael Sullivan, the former U.S. attorney, is the leading Republican candidate. But I suspect that, like most Senate races in Massachusetts, except for a Scott Brown shocker, this will stay in Democratic hands.
And one other primary that's still going on the House level is in South Carolina, where we have Mark Sanford bidding, of course, for redemption. We've talked about Mark Sanford almost endlessly over the last several years on these podcasts, is in a runoff and is not necessarily running off with the runoff.
Well, there was a public policy polling poll that came out this week, which is, of course, a Democratic-leaning poll, but it shows Mark Sanford with a sizable lead over Curtis Bostick, who is a evangelical former Charleston County Commissioner or
County Councilman. And he has been attracting some high-profile support. He's got at least one member of Congress in the House, a Republican, coming out for him, giving him money.
And also he got the endorsement this week of
Pat Boone.
Well, I wasn't even thinking of that. Rick Santorum has endorsed Curtis Bostick. But I suspect...
I think between Pat Boone and Rick Santorum, you're nailing down a sizable amount of the likely Republican vote in a South Carolina district.
Now, South Carolina 1 is not as conservative as some of the other districts in the state, but the point is the PPP poll does show that Sanford running behind Elizabeth Colbert...
The Democrat.
...Bush. Democrat has not won that seat since 1978, but it's very possible that with Sanford's numbers in that district, very, very poor. Independents don't like him. Republican women may not like him. That could be her chance, her hope of winning an upset in the May general election. I still think Sanford wins, but we'll see.
All right. So the runoff is in April. It's coming up
Tuesday.
And then we have a whole month for the Colbert-Bush campaign to pick up and see whether or not a Democrat can still win in that district. Stephen Colbert, her famous brother, has apparently dropped the Stephen Colbert Act and is actually campaigning directly as himself for his sister.
But the sad news, the tragic news...
In celebrity news.
Yeah, in celebrity tragic news. And tragic for us as well, because we'll have nothing else to talk about unless the next couple of months. But Ashley Judd's decision not to run for the Senate in Kentucky, of course, the Republicans would have loved for her to run because she's a pro-Obama person in a state where Obama lost by 23 points.
And she'd be running against Mitch McConnell, the multi-term senator who is the Republican leader in the Senate.
Longest-serving senator in Kentucky history. But the fact is that he'd never polls really that strongly. His internal polls had him only with a 4-point lead over Ashley Judd, but Ashley Judd says, I want to spend more time with Mark Sanford's family. She's not going to run.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin. The podcast is produced by Bracton Booker and edited by Kathy Shaw.
Join us again next week, won't you, for It's All Politics from NPR.